Got a case? Visit frankwalkerlaw.com. That's frankwalkerlaw.com.
WVU Talk on Trib Live Radio is brought to you by Frank Walker Law, criminal defense attorney, frankwalkerlaw.com.
Trib Live Radio presents the College Football Locker Room with Pitt beat writer Jerry DePaula, Penn State beat writer Bob Cone, and West Virginia beat writer John Harris. We got the local college football teams covered on Trib Live Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the College Football Locker Room on Trib Live Radio. John Harris with Bob Cone and an empty chair.
As usual.
Jerry DePaula will be coming and joining us lately after his weekly session at Pitt. We've got another good week of college football talk, locker room talk, even though we don't really get to go into the locker room when we cover the team.
Man. That's kind of a misnomer, isn't it?
They come and they bring them into the media room and we talk to them.
Well, people are welcome to come into our locker room right here if they want. So
yes.
If anyone's in the neighborhood, there's plenty of good parking out there. Come up on the Clark Building, sixth floor. We'd be happy to have you.
1 to 2 p.m. every Wednesday.
Welcome to our locker room.
And but since the door is open, Bob, and, well, that was kind of corny. But
what's that?
I said, since the door is open, that was kind of corny.
That door is open. We're leaving it open for Jerry.
But let's jump right into it and talk about Penn State facing last week my choice for repeating as a national champion.
Going out on a limb there, huh?
Oh, yeah. It may break off, but, you know, what the heck.
As limbs often do.
A game that pretty much went the way I thought. And I thought Ohio State, especially as the game went on, showed what makes them so good. When they're motivated and whatever, they're tough to beat. A lot of players, a lot of athletes.
Well, like you said, you said a friend of yours was talking about Ohio State. He described them as bored, and that's why they weren't playing up to their level before Saturday. And frankly, they came out looking a little bored too. But I think they woke up, and now that they've made the quarterback change, they're probably better now than they have been. We can talk about that. Let's talk about the game. The dark night at the Shoe, 108,000.
Yeah,
I didn't think that stadium held that many people. I think that was well over its listed capacity. We talked last week about why they keep calling it the Horseshoe, and then when you're inside the stadium, you see it's nothing like a horseshoe at all, because that previously open end, they filled that up with seats and a big scoreboard. Anyway, it was an impressive scene. Penn State came out throwing and then stopped. Had a long pass from Hackenberg to Godwin early. All they got were 3 points out of it. And then it was pretty much over after that. 3-0, Penn State led early. It's the first and only time they led in the game. Two things jump out about Penn State's offense. The return of freshman sensation Saquon Barkley. I've heard both.
Mm-hmm.
This guy rang up 194 yards on Ohio State. I just heard today that he's only the second running back in 15 years to reach that total. So that's pretty impressive. And he is impressive. You see him run. We saw him against the, you know, San Diego States, I guess, or the Buffaloes of the world, and we kind of thought, well, you know, he's not being challenged, but when you watched him run against those teams, you could see some things, you know, that even an untrained eyes like mine and sort of myopic eyes like mine could see. But then you see him do the same stuff against Ohio State, you know, and he's making guys miss, and he's running over would-be tacklers, and he is the real deal.
Okay, can I interrupt you right here? I'm sorry.
Oh, please, because I just said real deal, which is such a cliche. I deserve to be interrupted right now.
What you're saying is begging for this question. You got a guy running for 194 yards against Ohio State at the not really horseshoe, and they get drilled 38-3?
No, 38-10.
38-10?
No, they so they did score later.
I think I stopped watching it at that point.
But they didn't take the lead.
How do you get, okay.
Well, here's why, John.
194 yards, you're controlling the ball at the clock.
I said there were two things I wanted to talk about the offense.
Oh, I just let you do the first one?
It's okay, because you're setting up act two here.
Oh, thank you.
And that would be, Here's Christian Hackenberg's line. Uh-oh. Christian Hackenberg, everybody, is Penn State's quarterback. 7 of 13. 7 of 13. And that's 7 completions in 13 attempts. Now, that's not his halftime line. That's not his halftime total. That is for the game.
Wow.
7 of 13 for 120 yards.
Woo!
And one touchdown.
Wow.
Now, let's break that down even more.
Okay.
Chris Godwin, the very fine young receiver, sophomore, he's become their number one guy. Caught 2 long passes from Hackenberg, one on the second play and one toward the end.
How long was the first one for?
Well, they totaled 101 yards.
Wow.
Which means that if you take those two away, Hackenberg's remaining passes, he completed 5 passes for 19 yards. 1-9.
Wow. Right? Not even a 40.
That's
yards
like from here play. To over where Josh is sitting.
Wow.
19 yards, okay? They stopped throwing a couple reasons. They're not very good at throwing consistently, number one. Number two is Ohio State's defense going against Ohio State's front. Front 4, front 7. Mainly their front 4. They didn't blitz. They didn't have to against Penn State's beleaguered offensive line. Criticized all year, most of the year anyway. Rightfully so. They're not very good. Hackenberg was sacked 5 times. Four times in the second half when they did try to throw. I believe he threw 4 passes in the second half. And this is when they were trailing because he just couldn't. He just couldn't set up. He didn't have the time. He also had to run a couple times as well. And it was kind of the mismatch that we thought it would be. That would pretty much decide the game. Joey Bosa and company, and he's terrific, and he was double teamed, so other guys were in one-on-one situations and made plays. It was just it was a clear mismatch that we thought would transpire, if that makes sense, and that's exactly what happened. Hackenberg was hit a couple times, was noticeably limping, and yet he stayed in the game right to the end. And James Franklin, Penn State coach James Franklin, that is, was asked about that after the game. He was asked about that yesterday. Why do you leave your quarterback in the game who's hurt, who's limping? Game's long out of reach. And he basically said, we never feel, we don't surrender, we don't quit. We play to the end. They had their guys in. We left our guys in. Okay, I guess that sends a message, but it doesn't do much for Christian Hackenberg's physical well-being, nor maybe his emotional or mental well-being either. I don't think to have to take a beating like that well after the game has been decided. So what do we have there? Not unexpected. I do remember the score I predicted. I don't usually do that, but it was 31-14. they did tack one on at the end with 4:14. Ohio State, I mean.
Garbage.
It was 31-10, and I said 31-14, so I'm going to pat myself on the back for coming reasonably close, even though the final score, obviously. And look, if you put money on the game, and we all know people do, you're not happy with that because the line was 17.5. Well, actually, when it was 31-10, they pretty much covered, but it was just your old-fashioned country blowout. Penn State dropped a touchdown pass. They had a touchdown called back, although when you saw the replay, it was a holding call, another long run by Barkley, 44. It would have been a 44-yard touchdown, but it was kind of out in the open field, and the tackle just wrapped the guy up as Barkley was turning the corner. Now, Barkley's good enough to have eluded the tackler or just knocked him over or something. But the fact is, it was one of those holding calls that enabled the play to be successful. Their offense all season has been the question, and remains so. Defensively, Look, Ohio State, we were saying they have three players. Ezekiel Elliott, the running back, 153 yards. JT Barrett, the quarterback, who was the red zone quarterback, now is the guy because he not only did he run for 102 yards, but Cardale Jones, the starter, was, awful. Throwing the ball. And then Braxton Miller, this guy is amazing. You know, he used to be the quarterback. He gets hurt. Now they have him lining up at H-back and receiver and in the backfield and the Wildcat. And, you know, caught four passes, 33 yards, scored a touchdown. The guy's all over the place. Athletes, great athletes. Saquon Barkley's in that category. Otherwise, Penn State did not have the people to match up with Ohio State. But they don't have to play him anymore. And
Let me stop you right there.
Yeah, I've been kind of rambling. You probably should have stopped me earlier.
But that's what you do. That's what we like. Okay, we all got our style.
Well, you
got your style.
You're being very
keep it like that.
All right.
If I'm a Penn State fan, and I'm not, but what do I take from that? Because obviously the gulf is wide. We were talking about Penn State. Obviously, Penn State, and we were talking about Ohio State, which is number one. But we're talking about the offensive line. Urban Meyer, Ohio State's not going anywhere. They're going to get these players every year. If I'm a Penn State fan, what do I take from that game? Not just for right now or that last week, but for this year, next year. Can they narrow the goal? Can they get it closer? Are they going to start to get the offensive linemen?
Is it going
to happen?
Because the team that took the field Saturday, and I hate to make excuses.
And you are, but
for James Franklin, but sometimes an excuse is a valid reason. And the fact is that the sanctions, the NCAA sanctions that limited their scholarships, is showing up visibly in two areas. The kicking game, where both punters and both kickers are walk-ons.
Okay.
The punting game was pretty bad, and Ohio State's was terrific, and you really saw the difference when you have a punter on scholarship as opposed to a couple of guys who are trying very hard and who actually do well in practice. It doesn't translate to the games, but maybe that's the difference, you know, in quality. Mm-hmm. So you see that, but again, going back to the line, the offensive line, which – every conversation about the offense more or less begins and ends with that, more so than Christian Hackenberg, I think. They don't have any depth. They're playing the best five they can, and that's a little unnerving because it's not a very good line as it wasn't last year, and that's because they're thin. But now that they're back to the full complement of scholarships, you know, 80, 85, presumably that will improve, as it will across the board. They'll be able to sign to offer specialists, scholarship, and improve the line and really improve everywhere theoretically, because they're going to have the numbers, they're going to have the scholarships to do that. But will they ever be Ohio State? Will they ever reach that level where they will compete with Ohio State every year? They really haven't. Even before, correct? They came close a couple here and there. If you're talking about consistency, I don't think so. But that doesn't mean they're not going to be a lot better than they are now, and we'll be able to beat Ohio State here and there, maybe a year, you know, 2 years in a row or something. But Ohio State's a dynasty, let's face it. And Urban Meyer, let's not forget that. You have to consider him one of the top one, two, or three best coaches in the country. Maybe number one.
Oh, I think he's the best.
He's kind of surpassed, sorry, Nick Saban.
He's falling back a little bit, Saban.
But you know, you can't overlook that.
Okay, but what about Michigan? And let's not even talk about how they lost last week to Michigan and Michigan State.
Boy.
So forget Ohio State. We've got Michigan now moving up the charts. We've got Michigan State, which has been in there. Iowa's undefeated this year. So where are they going to be able to fit in here? I mean, forget, let's throw Ohio State out the window here. We're still dealing with the Michigan. We're still dealing with the Michigan State. Somehow Penn State's got to find a way.
There's
to fit
no reason
in there somewhere.
Penn State can't be on a par with those other schools. If we just take for granted, I guess, or assume that Ohio State is going to be Ohio State as they are now and a cut above, right, the rest of the league,
yeah,
as they are demonstrating, as you know, before our eyes. And then you had that so-called second tier that you mentioned with Michigan State and now Michigan. There's no reason in the world Penn State can't be at that level and being able to, as those other teams do, challenge Ohio State here and there, and maybe once in a blue moon or once every couple of years, win a conference championship. But if you're talking big picture, long haul, assuming Urban Meyer doesn't, you know, he pretty much rearranged his life after his kind of meltdown and seems to have a pretty good grasp on things. He seems to be more, you know, more relaxed and actually fairly candid for a coach at his level. I'd like to see more of that elsewhere. There's no reason to think he won't be there another 20 years, you know, or 10, let's say. And as long as he's there, they're going to be an elite program, an absolute, you know, top of the line, elite Alabama, et cetera, program. You know, it's funny. I was just thinking, who are the other elite programs? And, you know, Alabama comes to mind. Who else right now would you say year in, year out? You know, would you say 5 years from now they're going to be where they are now? TCU or Baylor?
No.
I don't think so. What's going on in the SEC?
They're beating each other up.
Right. Well, sure. But Alabama struggled a little bit this year.
Yeah.
They'll probably be there in the end like they always are. But how long is Nick Saban going to hang around either? So what happens there? West Coast?
No.
The Pac-12's crazy this year.
No.
So, you know, we just might be talking about a dynasty in the making here in college football.
Yeah.
that happens to be Penn State's neighbor, and just going to have to keep playing them and playing them and hope for the best and catch lightning in a bottle, you know, here and there and beat them. But it's hard to imagine them, you know, again reaching that level, because nobody else is going to hit that level either, I don't think.
Well, to steal what a Denzel Washington line and what a Training Day in the Big Ten, Ohio State's playing chess, everybody else is playing checkers. Okay,
are you saving that one up?
No, I just kind of popped it to my head.
That's terrific. I could remember movie. I just can't.
I mean, but I've said before, it's like a SEC team almost in the Big Ten with the speed, the athleticism, the talent, and the depth. At those positions, the skill positions, they got that speed. You see some Big Ten teams that have some speed. Ohio State's just fast. I mean, they got fast linemen, quick linemen, athletic running backs, wiry. You know what I'm saying? They just fast
and
everywhere.
It's self perpetuating as long as they avoid the issues and problems that brought down the previous regime, the Jim Tressel regime, and we all know what happened there.
Well, Urban Meyer's slate's not that clean either now.
Well,
so he has to watch what he's done in the past as well.
Like I said, as long as they avoid that sort of nonsense,
yeah.
You know, like we're seeing Louisville now. Good Lord.
I wish we had some time to talk about that, but that's basketball. We'll leave that alone.
And don't for a minute think it's just Louisville.
Yeah.
How could it only be at Louisville and no place else? Well, the reason is somebody came forward and wrote a book, The madam, I guess.
Yo, speaking of Louisville, you got change for a 20.
And her three daughters who are involved in this too. There's a family.
At least ones, man.
There's a reality show, I think, in the making. But anyway, we're kind of getting off track, which I don't mind doing. You know, this is what we do.
Oh, boy.
Crazy stuff, though. None of it a surprise, by the way. Right? I don't think Pitino, you know, there's this argument now. The big question is, what did Pitino know and when did he know it?
Please, let's not even go there.
But
okay?
I think, my opinion is that these coaches at that level who sort of lord over a program as CEO, if you're a CEO, you have a lot of layers below you and you tend to be insulated intentionally from unpleasant matters or... And so it wouldn't surprise me if, in fact, he was totally unaware and oblivious to this. But I guarantee there are a lot of people directly beneath him, and I didn't mean to really have it come out that way, who did know. And it's probably, well, do we tell the old man or not? No, let's just keep
wait,
it
wait,
quiet.
Wait a minute. Rick Pitino reminds me of the kid with his, you know, fingers in his ear. Nah, 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 nah. I don't hear you. Wait a minute.
Okay.
So we got this guy who at the time was a graduate assistant, right? He's yeah, okay.
No, I think he was like quality control. You know, quality, one of those guys.
Okay. And now he's gonna just okay. Let me no. We're gonna let Coach know about this. We're gonna just do this, man. Look,
yeah.
We're gonna keep it on the down low.
Yeah.
Now we're gonna get some cash. We're gonna bring the strippers in. Coach's not gonna know. I'm gonna just do this on my own.
You don't think that's plausible?
No, no,
I do.
No, and if even if he doesn't know anything, he's still accountable because it's his program.
Well, that's
so. No, either way,
that's called black.
If he didn't know, he's at fault. If he that's knew, he's at fault.
That's that great NCAA category.
Yeah,
lack of what
institutional control. Either way,
right? The buck stops there. The buck stops with the guy making $5 million or whatever he's making.
Yeah.
Sure, he should have known. If he didn't know, he should have. If he did know, bye-bye.
Well, it reminds me of the Flategate with the two locker room guys that just took it upon themselves to just do this. You know, forget with Tom Brady, forget Belichick. We're just going to do it because I want to do it.
There's a mentality among the Belichicks and Patinos, you know, that you're very successful coaches who are more than just coaches. They kind of let it be known, look, do whatever you think should be done, okay? Do whatever you think should be done. I don't want to know about it.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
Whether they actually say the words, I don't want to know about it, if it's not stated, I think it's implied. Because I have more important things to do here. Don't bother me with this stuff. Just do what it takes, okay? Don't get caught.
I read an interesting article in the Louisville has done a really interesting thing Louisville newspaper market or journalism market last few years. Some really good writers from their daily have been hired by, there's a local TV station there that's been doing a lot of reporting now. And I think Rick Bozich. Good writer. I knew him way back when I used to work there. And they've been doing some really interesting writing about this situation, even before the ESPN report came out. Yesterday, and one of the articles was about at that time when it was going on, Louisville was struggling a little bit recruiting wise. There was some calls for Rick Pitino's head because I did think this was right after the other incident that had happened. Kentucky all of a sudden was starting to dominate, and Kentucky and Louisville, we know about that rivalry right across the state. So the point of the article was there were some outside forces maybe putting some squeezing the Louisville basketball program a little bit, which maybe might have caused some people to think about what else can we do to enhance our recruiting. And as the article continued, they talked about all of a sudden, during this same time frame, all of a sudden Louisville started to get higher quality recruits. All of a sudden Louisville is more relevant. All of a sudden, two Final Fours, what, in like 3 years, they win a national championship. Now, the article said, no, hey, by no means – do we know this for a fact? But these are people in Louisville who were there who are trying to come up with a reason why would something like this happen. And they're looking at the timing of it, and they're like, wow, you know what? This is food for thought. This is something to think about.
Wait, when you talk about outside forces, those outside
alums.
No, but they're present everywhere at every big program. And I just thought another example. Did you see the 30 for 30 on ESPN about USC
and
Pete Carroll?
Yeah.
Well, there's an example of what I was talking about. He claims not to have known a thing about the whole arrangement with Reggie Bush and his family.
Of course not.
And I believe it. I believe it because these guys have created a bubble, I guess a cocoon. I use the word insulated, separated, layers beneath them. You know, if you take an organizational flow chart, you've got the CEO, in this case, the head coach at the very top, and then you got the guy here, and then two guys here, and eight guys here, and blah, blah, blah down here, okay? That's a long way. That's like a wall to get through to the top guy, and that's the way the top guy wants it.
Well, see, the reason why I'm skeptical is because not only are student-athletes or potential recruits or players who are on the Louisville roster involved, but also people that were associated with some of these kids. And I find it hard to believe that somehow this doesn't get to him, that somehow somebody – people, come on, man. People talk about everything. Something like this, at that magnitude, if I'm a parent or a family member and I somehow hear about this, somebody else is going to hear about it. So I find it hard to believe, even if I agree with – take your premise and say, hey, he didn't know anything about it. Somehow, some way, you can't – Louisville, that's – everybody knows what's going on in that town. So, that's the basketball program dominates,
sure,
that city.
And look, I'm not ruling that out, but all I'm saying is I can visualize, I guess, or I can imagine a scenario where these types of coaches are so protected. Mm-hmm. But let's say that Pitino caught wind of it, heard something about it.
Yeah.
So he goes up to somebody, maybe even not the guy involved. Hey, I've been hearing these stories about all these shenanigans going on. Is that true? Nah, coach.
No, don't worry about it. Man, I don't know what those people are talking about.
Okay.
Man, you know, you got a lot of haters.
All right,
there,
well,
coach.
Look, you know, I just thought I'd ask, and all right, good, thanks.
And truth be told, he doesn't want to know. He doesn't.
No,
want,
that's
he
the
doesn't
whole point
want
of
to
this.
Know. He wants to hear it, no, even if it's not true. And if he knows deep in his heart that it's not true, he doesn't want to know about it.
That's why they separate themselves.
He doesn't want to know about that.
And try to keep their distance, because it's just another headache.
Yeah.
You know, to and plus, it implicates them, you know?
Headache. He's got more than a headache now.
It implicates them, you know, when the hammer falls, as it is, and then it turns out that the coach, that the guy at the top was in on it. You know, it's like Watergate, if we can go back there to anyone old enough to remember that, and I know you are, Josh, you don't know about that. It's way before your time. You know, Nixon maintained this, that's President Richard Nixon, that, you know, this whole posture that he had his plumbers, his dirty tricksters doing all the work, and tried to, you know, give the appearance that he was above it all. Well, guess what, though? In this case, he wasn't. He wasn't.
Well,
so we'll see.
I don't know how we got sidetracked, man, but this was a great conversation. Louisville, Rick Pitino. You are listening to the College Football Locker Room on Triple I Radio. We're going to take a break, and we're going to get right back.
Dick Nixon.
Giovanni's Pizza and Pasta, located on 6th Street in downtown Pittsburgh. Fast and free delivery. Give them a call at 412-281-7060. Lunch specials starting at just $7.49, with selections including small grilled chicken salad, a bowl of soup, two cuts of pizza and a small garden salad, penne pasta, garlic bread and a small salad, half a hoagie and french fries, or half a hoagie and a can of pop. That's 412-281-7060. You can even order online. Giovanni's Pizza and Pasta in downtown Pittsburgh, and online at ilovegiovannis.com.
WVU Talk on Trib Live Radio is brought to you by Frank Walker Law, criminal defense attorney, frankwalkerlaw.com.
Trib Live Radio presents the College Football Locker Room with Pitt beat writer Jerry DePaula, Penn State beat writer Bob Cone, and West Virginia beat writer John Harris. We got the local college football teams covered on Trib Live Radio.
Welcome back to the College Football Locker Room on Trib Live Radio. John Harris here with Bob Cone, and we're still joined by an empty seat. It has not been filled yet by Jerry DePaula, but so we're just going to move on.
Isn't this like the longest?
Yeah, it is.
Absence.
It is.
He's usually here before the break. I wonder what's going on.
I don't know. Maybe some big news over at Pitt.
Maybe Pitt, now that they're ranked, you know, they're being swamped with national media
and
all kinds of attention, and they're just taking up a lot of time.
Well, we'll move on to West Virginia, the Mountaineers, who dropped to 3-3 following a 62-38 beat down at number 2 Baylor. And we've seen this before. You saw it before. I've seen it before. And the interesting thing, when I look at this game the other day in Baylor, and I remember when I covered the year with Geno Smith and Stedman Bailey and Tavon Austin, and they won 70-63. And at that time, Baylor was coming off of, you know, after RG3, but they didn't have any defense. Phil Bennett was the defensive coordinator, the former Pitt defensive coordinator. There was talk of him maybe getting fired. You know, this team, this program, they just score a bunch of points. And you fast forward to now, and we've got a number 2 team that's still high-powered offense with a defense that, according to West Virginia coach Dana Holgerson, the nose tackle, is the best defensive lineman he's faced in 20 years of coaching. They still got the offense, but now there's a defense to go with it, and it just makes a person like myself to sit there and wonder and say, it seemed like at that time, West Virginia was ahead of the game, was ahead of Baylor a little bit, was ahead of a TCU, which was rebuilding at that time with a lot of young players. And now we look at it, and West Virginia still seems to be in the same place. And now we see Baylor and we see TCU. We always see Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. Texas has fallen back, but where are the Mountaineers right now? I'm wondering, I mean, has there been much progress? We're looking in year five of the Dana Holgorsen era, and I see a lot of running in place right now.
Well, there was significant progress last year. Would you use that word? Significant?
Yeah.
Some.
Yeah.
Because 2 years ago they were pretty bad, actually. And then last year they sort of got respectable. They beat Baylor at home.
Right.
They shored up the defense, not to, the world-class defense level, but certainly better than it was. I think maybe they've hit that plateau now where they're not going to be awful and they're not going to be great. They're going to be good to pretty good in a good year, I think. What's got to change? Well, recruiting, for one thing, but it's going to be tough to get those kind of players that they want, get them to come to Morgantown. Facilities. I don't know. I've never understood the role of, why do recruits go to where they go? And, usually here it's playing time, be on TV, win a championship. What about facilities? Didn't they upgrade?
Brand new stadium.
Yeah. Right.
Brand new stadium.
Really, really nice. Nice place to be, and it's in Texas also, and that's where so much of the talent is. So I don't know what they're going to do with that stadium. It's not a very attractive place to play.
No.
Right now.
Probably at the bottom of the barrel in the Big 12.
Yeah. And, just their location. Again, and we've talked about this, and you've talked about this a lot because it's true. They don't geographically, in this realignment of all the conferences, there are a lot of schools that are out of place. Penn State plays one of those this week, Maryland. What are they doing in the Big Ten?
Money.
Well, no, that's a given, but when you get beyond that, aesthetically, I don't know if that word is correct, they don't fit.
No.
West Virginia does not fit in the Big 12. I think, this is the recurring theme that you've addressed, and Dana Holgorsen has addressed as well, because he's almost like a coach. I was thinking of, and I'm going to shift to Penn State for a minute, because they play Maryland, who fired their coach Randy Edsall, who was very successful where at UConn, at Connecticut, or a couple of good seasons at UConn, in the Big East, right? In the Big East, and that made me think of a coach named Greg Schiano. Who coached where?
Rutgers.
Very successful at Rutgers in the Big East. He goes to the NFL, bombs out. It's interesting with Dana. And then I thought of Dana. Dana didn't change schools, but his schools changed leagues.
Yep.
And it's almost as if he's a new coach now in a new world.
No. He was hired because he coached where? He coached in the Big 12. He made it. Everybody's
right,
playing that air raid offense now,
sure,
in the Big 12. The thing that made him attractive to West Virginia, it's no longer attractive because everybody does it. Texas Tech does it. Everybody does it. So everybody has a high-powered offense.
He won the Big East, though, and was successful in the Big East as those two coaches I mentioned, and there may be more. Because I was going to think it through further and didn't, sorry. Successful in the Big East, which was never a football conference, as we've seen, And then they go somewhere else, or in this case, West Virginia goes somewhere else, and he's struggling.
Yeah. I don't know what the answer is. He's already gone on record as saying, we don't recruit against the Big 12. We don't go against them. He said it's an arms race.
So they have to play them, but they don't recruit against them.
How do you do that? If you're not getting elite kids out of Texas and out of the Southwest, how are you going to compete in the Big 12? I don't get that.
Well, they staked out Florida, though, which is pretty.
Yeah, but they're not getting the elite guys out of Florida. They're getting some good players. They're not getting that. What they need, the one thing they're not getting, the linemen, either offensive, defense, the elite linemen is what they need to compete in the Big 12. And Baylor has it now. You know, TCU has it. You know, Oklahoma has it. West Virginia doesn't have it. They have, if you look at their linemen, defensive linemen, they're serviceable type guys, not real athletic guys. And here's the bad news for Mountaineer fans. All their starting linebackers this year are seniors. Carl Joseph, who suffered a season-ending knee injury, was a senior. K.J. Dillon, senior. Terrell Chestnut, senior. So we're looking at the defense next year. I think Kyle Rose, the nose tackle, senior. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at a defense next year. It may be better, but it's going to be better with a lot younger players. And
how could it be better next year?
I mean, if we're going to follow along and say they're getting better, I'm trying to deal with reality here. The offense should be better. Skylar Howard will be a senior. Most all the skill guys will be back. But the offense could be better. But if the defense takes a step back, which it looks like it could do, where are we going to be? We're going to be in the same place.
Well, then you're back to 2 years ago. But I'm wondering, too, now about the offense and the quarterback situation, because Skylar Howard is not that kind of guy, that kind of quarterback, no, to run the type of offense that got Dana Holgorsen this job.
No.
Clint Trickett became that guy.
Yeah.
Because Clint Trickett, if nothing else, was a really smart, a coach's son. But Skylar Howard, you know, he likes to run. He's a good runner and all that. But what identity? They've really gotten away from that identity. That's not to say you don't run. When you know, the air raid offense definitely takes a running game into account.
Yeah.
But as far as quarterback play, I think they've taken a step backward. How did that happen?
Here's the irony. You've touched on a tremendous irony, maybe the greatest irony of the Dana Holgorsen era at West Virginia. Known as a quarterback guy, has never recruited one, really, of that level. Geno Smith was a Bill Stewart recruit. Geno Smith was already down. He took those tools and maximized them, but that was not his player. So how can the quarterback guru not be able to recruit an elite quarterback? Ironic to me.
Would you happen to know, and not to put you on the spot, but William Kress, the kid out of Baltimore.
Yeah.
Which I believe he came from the same
– Baltimore.
From Tavon Austin's
high
school.
To the same high school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He helped recruit him.
Yeah.
What happened with him?
Well, clearly he wasn't ready to step up, because this year he's been – at times has been playing running back, and now we were told – he's been banged up.
He was banged up last year. He played in like two games and hurt his shoulder.
Which means he wasn't good enough to beat out Skylar Howard. This was the guy that we were told last year was the guy.
He was a pretty high-profile recruit.
Okay, now we got another quarterback. Who wrote a story today. David Sills.
I was going to ask you about him. He's the
kid.
Right.
Who was offered a scholarship at USC as a quarterback, recruited, comes to West Virginia. And lo and behold, last week he catches two passes for 64 yards, including a touchdown pass. He was recruited as a quarterback. He's playing wide receiver. We were told yesterday at the press conference that he really, you know, he hadn't been taking reps since August. He wanted to play. We put him on the scout team because we had a shortage of receivers. He looked good. We put him in the game. Hey, we're going to let him play. At the end of the year, we'll reassess his situation. Now, What are we talking about here? Now we've got
we're talking about a problem at the quarterback position.
Yes.
Which is basically what everything Dana Holgorsen was about.
Yes.
But he was supposed to be the guy that could take maybe somebody not your five-star prototype 6'4", 230 quarterback out of somewhere in California, but take a good player, as he did with Clint Trickett last year, and turn him into a more than serviceable quarterback to run that kind of offense, but we're not seeing it now, and apparently it's not on the horizon.
Skylar Howard was a community college guy.
Right.
I mean, he wasn't – Sam Houston, I think he got an offer.
Stephen F. Austin.
Yeah. Okay. Dana Holgorsen spent a lot of the preseason, the non-conference schedule, talking about how Skylar Howard plays with his chip on his shoulder, and because he was not recruited by Big 12 schools, and we're starting to see why.
That only get you so far.
But why are you? I don't understand. Those are the things that you don't need to do right now. With your program the way it is, you don't need to put your quarterback out there on Front Street, and then when things go wrong, you kind of have to back up a little bit. Don't do that. Let's see what happens with him before we put him out there. And the last three games in the Big 12, we've seen why Big 12 schools weren't – and I like Skylar Howard, nice kid. has been an effective quarterback in this system, but I don't see Big 12 schools lining up to get players like that. And that's what we're going up against.
Right.
Where we're going to play the number. Right. And apparently Baylor's got quarterbacks behind this guy that maybe are better than the guy they got playing now.
I don't know if going into the season or even last season looking ahead, Dana Holgorsen felt, well, you know, I'm sort of a quarterback guru. Just give me somebody who can knows that a football is blown up and not stuffed, and I can make him a quarterback in my system, or whether he was saying, as brilliant as I am, we're in trouble. See, I don't know that, and I don't know if he would ever, admit to whether he felt that he and his staff, could turn a Skylar Howard into the type of quarterback that he wanted, or whether he knew they were in trouble. But they appear to be in a little bit of trouble right now at that rather important position.
They play at number 4 TCU next week. TCU cannot afford to lose that game if TCU wants to remain in the national championship playoff hunt. And I look back to the 2012 season, the last year for Geno Smith when West Virginia started 5-0 and then fell off the map after that. And I'm wondering, to me, if you look at recruiting, should have loaded up that next year. And I did a story preseason, Dana Holgorsen, and he said, hey, even we were 5-0 that year, I knew we were in trouble. But if you knew what you had coming back offensively, to me, that was the year they should have loaded up JUCO defensive guys, because that was when you're going to have to make your run. If you were going to do it, that was going to be the year. After beating, Clemson 70-33 in the Orange Bowl, you're bringing that nucleus back, and you go into the next year knowing, well, we got this great offense, but our defense is terrible. To me, that offseason, that recruiting year should have been loading up for that team with the eye on the future. But this is the team. This is the team where we can actually contend for a national championship, but they couldn't do it because the defense was not up to that standard, and the offense eventually fell apart, and they really haven't recovered. The last few years have been spent trying to build up the defense. The offense has fallen off a little bit. So it's like we're shifting from either offense or defense. Offense, defense. And like Baylor has done, Baylor's been able to get the offense and defense on the same page. West Virginia's not close to being there yet.
So what was the year they won the Orange Bowl? Was that 11?
Yeah, 11.
Okay. You would think that would have been a pretty good springboard.
Yes.
To recruiting.
Yes.
When you win the Orange Bowl, you've sort of arrived, even for that year, but that in itself should attract some people, get people's attention. So that would have been fall of 2011, and then starting in 2012, 13, 14. So, a lot of these kids who are playing now, a lot of these players,
this is it for them.
Were recruited during that time,
yeah.
But it seems that they didn't get a lot of studs.
Didn't get the right kids.
From using that Orange Bowl as a taking off point.
Nope.
They maybe, they had that opportunity and didn't quite take advantage of it.
Well, we better let Mr. DePaula jump in on it. We're winding down. We brought up the best for last, Jerry DePaula. We'll let him talk about Pitt and talk about a little feud going on with Pitt and Penn State this week.
A little dust up between Coach Narduzzi and Penn State. Well, it happened. I actually started it. I'll take credit for it or blame for it.
Jerry.
In Monday's news conference, I asked Coach Narduzzi if Nathan Peterman's, very good completion percentage is a result of his talent or play calling. And he immediately said, well, no, it's talent. He's a very accurate passer. But then he says, he changed his mind. Well, he didn't change his mind, but he said, sometimes it's play calling. And sometimes a coach – the play caller can make the quarterback look bad if he doesn't make the right play call. And we've seen that happen in college football in some places, and some places closer than others. Of course, the reference, which everybody assumed it was, correctly, I believe, was opposed to Penn State, where a high-profile quarterback is having a poor season. He's barely completing half of his passes, and he hasn't been very accurate all season, and then that's been the problem. And maybe play calling is it. Maybe Pat Narduzzi knows a little bit more about Penn State than he lets on. But Of course, James Franklin took the high road, you know, didn't respond to it, you know, didn't say a whole lot. What did he say, Bob? He, in your story today, he just said that...
he says there, you know, people read into things, although, you know, if something isn't like on a billboard in huge 8-foot-high letters, it's pretty easy to read. And this is what Narduzzi was, you know, the message was clear, but Franklin was prepared. He had his message, and it was basically what we all expected. I don't want to get in. I'm not getting in it. I just care about Penn State.
Well, they've had, you know, Twitter wars, you know, during, you know, recruiting time, and their game is going to be played next year for the first time since the year 2000. People are getting into it. Pat Narduzzi is not afraid of a fight. He said, you know, when he was first hired on the Heinz Ward Show on WPXI, he said, "I've been involved in a situation where at another school with the state thought they were better than us."
Right.
He said
he's sort of assuming the position of the scrappy underdog. Now, no offense to Pitt, but he's sort of creating that scenario of Michigan State versus Michigan, where even though Michigan State the last few years has been the better program, look, when all is said and done, Michigan is still the dominant, the number one program in the state of Michigan, and Narduzzi is kind of saying, you know, by being feisty and sort of combative and belligerent, that we're number two. That's how I read it, and I'm sure a lot of Pitt fans would disagree. But then again, in the big picture, it's probably that analogy is not entirely inaccurate.
Penn State is the number one program in the country, in the state, and it's been proven over the years. It's been proven in recruiting. It's been proven in the way Penn State has competed over the last several years. Pitt has been a mediocre program until this season, and this season isn't even over yet, so we don't know how it's going to turn out. But Penn State has been to more bigger bowl games. It's won national championships. Pitt hasn't won one since 1976.
Yeah, you can even just in the recent future, the recent past, I mean, there's kind of a difference, I guess. The past is before the future's.
Recent future is 5 minutes ahead. Now, right?
Well, then, I guess you weren't here in the recent future.
No, I wasn't.
Hey, save your guys' fights for after the show.
No, what?
I don't know. Where you go.
I really said.
Josh is telling us 2 minutes, guys. We got to get predictions.
Who remembers last week's?
We got to get predictions. We got to be consistent. Jerry, Pitt.
Pitt will beat Syracuse and cover the point spread, 27-20. It's only a 6.5-point spread, so they'll barely
Where's
cover.
The game?
At the Dome.
Carrier Dome. They're practicing in noise that they claim is louder than the Carrier.
What is the line?
6.5. 27-20, I picked Pitt.
Who's favorite?
Pitt is.
Pitt's favorite on the road.
Against Syracuse. They're
Trap game.
They've already won 3 road games this year.
Trap game. Syracuse 21-20.
Okay, here you go.
I agree with Bob. 24-21, Syracuse.
You're in big trouble. I just want to just say, since we're still talking about Pitt, that part of the reason for this, for being sort of number two to Penn State right now, is Big East versus Big Ten for many years.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
that
Penn State.
Had a lot to do with it.
Penn State,
Maryland. Maryland with a new coach.
Woo.
Maryland with a quarterback, Perry Hills from Central Catholic, who's a great runner but can't throw.
Yeah.
Penn State saw a pretty good running quarterback last week.
Yeah.
Perry Hills is a fine young man. He's not JT Barrett.
Right.
It's not TJ Brown either.
That's right. His successor, two Western PA QBs at Maryland, and I think Penn State wins 24-13.
Jerry?
24-10, Penn State.
24-10?
That's just what I said almost. You're 3 points off.
28-3.
Whoa.
Penn State. Yes.
Thought you were going for the...
Folks, I wish we had more time. We don't. We're trying to get another hour. Hopefully, maybe one day we can get it. You've been listening
that
to the
nice.
College Football Locker Room on
it.
Trib Live Radio.
Oh.
Have a great week.